Welcome to Your Money's Worth. I'm Kiplinger's Associate Editor, Ryan Ermey, joined as always by Senior Editor, Sandy Block. Sandy, how are you?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you?
Good and busy. We're both, I think, kind of running around and on the road this week, so we're recording in a fleeting moment that we're both together. And it's a sort of, it's a Father's Day special.
Go, Dad!
So in an effort to mix things up a little bit, so loyal listeners to the show will remember that my parents have gotten a little upset that I'm continuously mentioning them on the show, even though I've never really said anything embarrassing about them, or I hadn't up to a point. And then in order to, you know, teach them a lesson, I mentioned casually that my father cheats on his taxes.
Which is not true.
But in an effort to let my parents tell their side of the story, we're going to do a special Father's Day segment here. I talked with my dad about some very important personal finance, parenting-related issues. So listen in. All right, we are here, and on the phone is someone I actually talk on the phone with regularly, and that is my father, Dave Ermey. Dad, how you doing?
I'm doing great, son. How are you?
Not too bad. So you and Mom have indicated to me that you're not particularly pleased with how much I talk out of school about the two of you and our family on the podcast. Is that true?
Well, we've certainly noted that that you've had plenty of conversation about us. I think your mother more than me, but it's great to get a chance to reply. You know, rebuttal's always good.
Right. So the theme here is, you know, I have said a couple things about you folks on the podcast, and so we wanted to give you a chance in honor of Father's Day. You know, every kid, I think, ropes their parents into buying them dumb or frivolous things that they don't need, you know, that we insist that we need and are going to use and get mileage out of, and of course won't. So we thought that, you know, the two of us could highlight a few of those instances. I've asked you to prepare your top three dumbest things, or shall we say financially dubious things that I made you guys purchase for me as a kid. I have my top three as well. I imagine that there could be some overlap here, but why don't you start with your number three dumbest thing that I made you guys buy?
Okay, number three, and just to be clear, we don't mean to say that all the things that you refer to about us on your on the podcast are negative.
No,
cast us in a negative way by any means. But so number three. It was, I think you were about six, and you had been and talking to us for some time about an instrument that you wanted for Christmas. It was, you know, all six-year-olds should start playing the violin, I think.
Yes.
Yes, and then you promised that you'd play, and you'd practice, and you wanted to take lessons. And so, to be perfectly clear, your mother and I didn't fall for that trap. However, your Aunt Marilyn
right. Did
fall for that one. And got you a violin, a very nice violin, albeit she was wiser than we would have been, and did make it a one-year lease that you got for her.
Yes, it was a rental.
For Christmas.
But yeah, I do remember unboxing it on Christmas morning, and, you know, everyone's like, oh, go, Ryan, play. And, of course, never. It sounded awful.
Yeah, I wasn't one of those people.
My number three, and I don't know if you're going to remember that. Well, maybe you will. We went to Colonial Williamsburg, you know, a couple times when I was a kid. But once we went with a couple other families, a couple other boys my age who all wanted, you know, souvenir toy guns. Do you remember the souvenir that I wanted?
Yes, I think it's still in my basement. I think it's a musket.
No, sir. I wanted a cane.
Well, we have one of those too. So,
so yes, you bought me a cane that I proceeded to walk around with. I think I thought it was like it could be like a, you know, one of those canes like with a sword in it. I thought it was going to be kind of a Zorro kind of vibe that I was going to be going for. Alas, I didn't get much mileage out of the cane.
Yeah, no.
All right, number two for you.
Number two for me. This is kind of a toss up. But I'll go with number two was in your teenage years, you started wearing contact lenses, which clearly is not frivolous or,
no.
or terribly. Actually, Mom very much promotes those to this day for you to wear.
I'm sure. Oh, yes.
But I thought one that was particularly interesting was that you had to have some blue tinted contacts.
Yeah, so
which would go perfectly with your very dark, almost black hair and eyebrows and such. So I think
right.
that was probably my number two.
Yeah, I think I wanted to look like, you know, John Stamos or something. I thought it was going to be quite striking.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
When in fact, no, I looked, and I remember I used to want to wear them for like special occasions.
Of course.
Like I wore them to like, I think like a middle school, like band concert or something. I wore them and every, mm-hmm. you know, all my friends, like people were like just doing, what happens when you do that and not all the time is that people just double take at you and go, it's like, were your eyes always that color? And it's like, no, I'm just, this was something
I just cool tonight.
Yeah, that's right. So number two for me, and I think this one might crack your list as well. I may be spoiling your number one, was when we were vacationing in Myrtle Beach and we stopped at like a, you know, outlet mall or something. And there was like a Sunglass Hut. And I wanted as an early birthday present a pair of designer sunglasses.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been my number one. That was one that sprang first to my mind. They were, but I'm not much of a brand guy, but I think they were Dolce and Gabbana.
Dolce and Gabbana. And
yes, Gabbana.
I was, you know, I used to read GQ and Esquire. And I thought that I was majorly, majorly hip with those things. And now, of course, they, you know, they're like the kind with these, the big fat, like inch wide arms on them. And,
oh, yeah.
you know,
metal, if I remember correctly.
They yeah. they look straight out of 2005, which they are, but they almost look like lady sunglasses. They're really, you know, I can't possibly wear them anymore. So, definitely one of the dumbest. I think I was like, oh yeah, it'll be my birthday and Christmas present.
Actually, it was pretty well played because, of course, you knew that would never, you know, stop your mother from buying you presents anyway. So
right,
nicely
yeah,
done in any case.
Like Mom's not going to wrap something up and put it under the tree. So that's always a majorly successful play. And so in that case, we'll move right on to my number one, which is a similar holiday theme. When I was a kid, I'm sure you'll remember that I asked for a dog for Christmas every year when I was a kid. And we finally did get one eventually, but before that, I got like robot dogs, I got stuffed dogs, I got remote control dogs, and they were all like each sadder than the last. Which, like, you know, obviously I was never going to play with a robot dog. But I think the pièce de résistance was in an effort to hopefully steer Mom, because Mom was the obstacle in getting the dog.
Pets in general, yes.
Yeah. And so I said, okay, if I can't have a dog, then let me have a parrot. So
yeah.
I had, you know, gone to the library and gotten books about parrots and rented videos and looked up all the exotic bird stores in the area. And then I remember you guys calling me into your bedroom one night in the midst of parrot fever and saying, all right, we're just going to get a dog.
But as an adjunct to that story, I'm pretty sure that it started with a visit with the neighbors across the street.
Yes.
Who had a macaw or a parrot.
Cockatoo, whatever it was.
Cockatoo, yeah. In any case, an exotic bird. And I think that was the genesis of that entire ploy by you. And again, amazingly effective, I have to admit.
Yeah, well, I knew that, Mom.
We weren't getting a bird that, you know, was going to live 45 years. And you were going to be in our house for another six tops. You know, so,
yeah. I was like, Mom, they can be a lifetime companion.
Yes.
I'll bring it to my dorm in college.
Yeah, another minus. Ay-yay-yay. So, yes, that was a remarkably effective play on your part, too. So.
Yeah. But, yeah, so there wasn't – I don't think – I wasn't a kid who asked for too many too many dumb things. Were there anything I stole one of yours? Was there anything else that made the short list?
The short list. Well, there was a drum set that almost made the list. But yeah. As it turns out, we didn't actually buy that. That was a hand me down from another friend.
That's right.
Thank goodness for that, because and also thank goodness you played it about three times.
I did, and I did get a couple lessons on that. But I thought I think the issue with that was like the lessons were all on like a little pad kind of thing, and I thought I was going to be like Animal from the Muppets, like from the first lesson.
Yeah, of course.
And of course, you have to start out on like a little rubber pad, and I just like wasn't into it.
That was my next one. There were, I only had a few.
Yeah.
But that was a good representative sample, though, I think.
Yeah. I mean, your foppish son wanting blue contacts and sunglasses and a cane. I think people are getting a picture of what kind of kid I was.
Let's not go into the cape stories then.
All right. Well, we'll save that one for another podcast. In the meantime, thank you very much for coming on, getting a little, a little bit of your say in this sort of thing. We'll have to have Mom on here soon. She no doubt has a better memory for these things than you do, if you won't take any offense.
Trust me, we talked to her. We talked before this.
Oh, she was consulted heavily?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, thank you so much for coming on, and I'll see you this weekend for golf.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it, son.
We're back, and we're here with Kiplinger's executive editor, Ann Smith, also my editor in charge of the investing coverage here. And we last spoke at the beginning of the year talking market outlook. And so we wanted to check back in. Thank you for coming on, Ann.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, Ryan.
So the market was humming along this year through April, but things have sort of been up and down recently. Where does the market stand, and how do we think stocks will perform through the rest of the year?
Well, I'll tell you, the broad market, which we measure by the S&P 500 index, is down about 4% from the high that it got to on April 30th. Our target for the end of the year is not far, actually, from where the S&P is trading today, around 2850 or so, and we get to that by looking at earnings expectations and applying what we think is the right multiple to that based on our assessment of how much risk investors are willing to take and how much we think they'll bid up prices. Now, if we're right, the market will have delivered, even going nowhere, going sideways for the rest of the year, the market will have delivered a 14% gain in price. You add in 2 percentage points of dividends, and that's a 16% return. So not bad.
So certainly not bad for the year, but it sounds like for the rest of the year, we're expecting a sort of what we call a sideways market.
Yeah.
And how should investors generally be strategizing for that kind of market?
Well, when the tide isn't lifting all boats, investors have to be choosy and selective and discerning. Mm-hmm. That means you tweak your holdings around the edges. You should definitely prepare for volatility. And you need to make sure that your investment mix stays where you want it to be. And you do that by rebalancing periodically. We've seen from the market lately that it's really important not to get swept away by the news of the day. We've had these very scary down days, and they're followed very quickly by these enormous rebounds. So it's just important to stick to your plan.
Well, when we talk about scary news of the day, I think the thing that's on everyone's mind is tariffs. And what are the possible ramifications of these U.S.-China trade negotiations, and what do we actually expect to happen?
Yeah, for good reason. Trade wars are scary.
It's got war in the name.
That's the biggest hurdle facing the market. Trade wars have the potential to raise costs for companies and consumers and crimp sales. And almost worse than that, they introduce uncertainty into a company's business plans.
Right.
And that makes CEOs very reluctant to spend on factories, equipment, business expansion, and that's just not good for the economy. With the stakes that high for both the U.S. and China, most experts and economists that I talk to think that we'll come to terms eventually, possibly hearing something as early as the end of this month at the G20 economic summit. But this is a long process.
Right.
It's not going to be, these imbalances didn't build up overnight, and it's not going to be solved overnight. It's going to be a long, drawn-out process, and that means volatility at every turn in the negotiations for investors.
So the other sort of major news factor that seems to be driving a little bit of volatility in the market, or at least over the past few months, is that the Fed seems to have shifted gears majorly. So how might that, Fed policy affect people's investments?
Yeah, that's volatility in the good direction.
Good.
Because with the Fed signaling that it's more amenable to not just keeping rates steady and not hiking, but actually cutting, that helps the market by keeping the economic expansion going. And just by the way, this expansion in July will become the longest one ever. And we think it'll make it that far. Stocks do very well in a low interest rate, low inflation environment. And this activist Fed in a pre-election year, I think, is going to make sure that we have that kind of environment.
So we talked about tweaking the portfolio around the margins and being strategic about where you're investing. What investments do we think look attractive now?
Well, like I said, we think the economy will continue to grow, but it's growing more slowly. It's okay. Definitely slowing down. So you want the growthier parts of the market, stocks that can deliver higher growth. That's tech. Always
sure.
Has been. It's a great example. But these days, you have to be more discerning than ever. Semiconductor manufacturers, for instance, they're smack dab in the middle
right.
of the trade war. A lot of internet stocks could be facing increased antitrust scrutiny coming up, and they've been very volatile. We like software and tech services stocks, such as Microsoft. Accenture is another good one. That's an IT business consultant. A fund that we like, if you're a fund investor, is Fidelity Select Software and IT Services.
And we talked a little bit about healthcare in our last discussion on this. Do we still like healthcare?
We still like healthcare. We might like it even better.
Oh.
It checks a lot of boxes. It's high growth, but also mm-hmm. defensive, because healthcare is not a discretionary expense for people. And as a nation overall, we're not getting any younger. Medical equipment makers, device makers, including Becton Dickinson, are attractive. Healthcare stocks have been battered by a lot of the political wrangling surrounding drug pricing mm-hmm. and proposals for a single-payer system. We think change in that area is likely to be incremental and very slow. So many of the stocks are great bargains now. Vanguard Healthcare is a good fund to consider. It's a member of the Kiplinger 25, which is the list of our favorites. And by the way, I encourage everyone to read about our favorite healthcare stocks and some funds, too, in the upcoming August issue of Kiplinger's Personal Finance.
You know, of course, when we talk about the market, we're not just talking about stocks. What about bonds?
Well, if there's anything we've seen recently, it's that bonds provide a very important ballast in your portfolio when the stock market is sinking. Bonds have done super well lately when the stock market has been rocky, especially longer-term treasuries. Income investors can look to dividend stocks and real estate investment trusts for income. One REIT we like is Realty Income. It's a member of the Kiplinger Dividend 15, which, as the name implies, is the list of our fave dividend stocks.
And we'll link that along with the Kiplinger 25, all of our wonderful investing lists in the show notes. And the last thing, I mean, would you have any other reminders for investors as we approach the latter half of the year?
Well, two. One is don't ignore international stocks.
Ah.
Those markets have been painful, and emerging markets will bear the brunt of trade wars if they escalate.
Right.
But they are extremely cheap now, and they've got to be a part of a diversified portfolio. I think we have a story scheduled for an upcoming issue of the magazine on low volatility ways to invest overseas, so be on the lookout for that.
Sure thing.
The other important thing, and Ryan, you know about this, as the market gets more volatile, I would just encourage everyone to stick to their plan, focus less on day-to-day gyrations, and keep your contributions up if you're young, have a shopping list for down days. If you're close to retirement or in retirement, make sure you're not overweight in stocks. You do that again by rebalancing faithfully, and that helps you to sell high and buy low, and it sort of removes this temptation that everybody has to time the market.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do know about this because I have a story coming out on that very topic in our upcoming August issue. In the meantime, what we've talked about today is a mere fraction of Ann's hugely comprehensive outlook for the market for the rest of the year that appears in our July issue of the magazine. Be sure to take a look at that. We'll have all of this material posted online in the show notes. And Ann, thank you so much for coming on.
Again, my pleasure, Ryan.
Before we go, Sandy and I wanted to play another game of deal or no deal. And Sandy, we are kind of back in that sort of parenting territory.
That's right. This is my deal or no deal is parent plus loans.
Okay.
Which a lot of parents, increasingly parents, take out to help their kids pay for college.
So are they a deal?
No, they are not a deal. Here's the problem with parent plus loans. Even though the interest rates will drop slightly for loans issued after July 1st, the rate for Parent Plus loans is slightly above 7%.
That's high.
That's high. In this environment, that's really high, particularly when you compare it to the loans that the students can take out. The federal student loans, the interest rate is about 4.5%. So there's a big spread there.
Yeah.
And so, but the reason that Parent Plus loans are popular, there's two things. One is that there's a limit on the amount of money you can take out in federal student loans each per year and over the student's lifetime. A freshman, for example, can only take out $5,500 in federal student loans.
Which doesn't go very far.
Doesn't go very far, right. Parent Plus loans, you can take out up to the cost of college, and almost everyone qualifies for them. Unless you have a really black mark on your credit record, you can get a Parent Plus loan. And then the other reason is some parents, perhaps good-heartedly, think they would rather borrow than have their kids borrow. But at such a huge spread in rates, it makes more sense to have your kids borrow as much as they can. You can always help them pay off those loans, but the overall cost is going to be so much less. We did some math in our July issue, which you can look up, but there's this, you know, over the 10-year payment period, you're talking about a really big difference in the amount that you're going to, those payments, and the amount of interest that you will pay. So have your kids take out the maximum amount of federal student loans they can take out. And if they graduate and they're unable to pay them off, you can help them then. And then you might want to explore other options. A home equity line of credit, for example, runs about 5.5%. If your credit is really good, even a private loan might be a better deal than a Parent Plus loan. Because what we're seeing now, you see these numbers, you know, these stories about people paying off their student loans when they're, you know, claiming Social Security, and you think, how could they still be paying off their student loans? Well, they're probably paying off
theirs.
Their kids' loans. That's right. They're paying off their kids' loans. So you're jeopardizing your own retirement. And the last thing I'll say, and this doesn't help if your kid's already been accepted and you're already in, but if you're considering a school and you discover that federal student loans, financial aid, and available income is not enough, you merely might want to reconsider whether you should send your child to that school versus taking out these high interest Parent Plus loans.
And this is something that we cover diligently in Kiplinger's magazines, our best college values. Our colleague Caitlin Pitzker is in charge of that. And I believe we are slated to have her on the show once those best value college rankings come out. So we'll be able to fill the dear listeners in.
That's right. So, Ryan, what's your deal or no deal?
So I wanted to talk about MoviePass because mine still works, but not the way it used to. But to me, I think it's still a deal. But then I started looking into it, and they've changed their terms, and it's all very squishy, and there's a lot of competitors. So I propose that you and I actually dedicate a segment on an upcoming show to exploring all of the different ways that you can go about saving on movies if you go to the movies quite a lot. So that will do down the line. In the meantime, I combed my backlog of calendar fodder. As you know, we can remind everyone, I used to write the financial calendar that appears in the front of
and
every
issue.
And
you were the best calendar writer we've ever had.
Of Kiplinger's Magazine. Yeah. Thank you very much. You know, it's like a dubious honor, but I'll take it nonetheless. One of the things that I used to like to recommend in the summer, which is a really good deal offered just about everywhere that you can go see movies, is that if you have little kids and take them early during the week, which, you know, if you're home with your kids in the summer, they're driving you crazy because they're not in school. You know, they're up. My niece and nephew are up at like, you know, crack of dawn every single morning.
And they're going too.
And you're exhausted by the time, you know, 10 a.m. sounds like an early movie to me on a Wednesday. But, you know, at that point, they've already had like two meals. Anyway, a number of major theaters offer these deals. So, for instance, Regal Cinemas through September 4th, every Tuesday and Wednesday at 10 a.m., they have a selection of G and PG rated films for $1 a ticket. Cinemark, theirs goes through September 8th. They have a 10-week program called, they all have, all these things sound the same. So Regal's is called Summer Movie Express. Cinemark's Summer Movie Clubhouse, 10 weeks. So if you had, it's 10 weeks, and if you had bought all 10 weeks in bulk, you'd be paying 50 cents a ticket, but you can still buy for $1 a ticket at the box office.
Wow.
For the same kind of movies, I mean, these are all, it's a mix of newer stuff and kind of, you know, it wouldn't even call it second run. It's like older stuff, but it's still like little kid movies that they're going to enjoy.
Great. So,
yeah, Paddington 2, Despicable Me 3, Peter Rabbit. I mean, that's sort of newer stuff. I think James Corden is Peter Rabbit. And then there's some older stuff like How to Train Your Dragon, Kung Fu Panda. So these are sort of old favorites.
So, Ryan, I just have one question. I actually would really like to see Paddington 2. Can I get in on this deal even though I'm not a kid?
They all say like fun for the whole family. And you can buy tickets online and they weren't like stopping me. They were all a dollar.
Uh-huh.
I didn't pull the trigger on any of them. And I think it might be – they might give you side eye if you show up there with no children.
No kid.
It's like quite possible. But I think the idea is to get the whole family through the door. The last one I'll mention is AMC. Their deal is Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Obviously a.m. Maybe you can get the kids in at 10 p.m. I was in a theater one time for the opening of The Dark Knight at the midnight showing, and someone was in there with a baby.
That happened to me one time in New York, and the people just were not standing for it. They're like, you have to take this kid out of here.
I love it.
They shamed her, and she left.
So AMC's deal, Wednesday, 10 a.m.,
okay.
$4 a ticket, but your $4 includes a kids pack of snacks. So kids popcorn,
fountain
drink. Yeah, because
your kids are going to want the snacks.
Fruit snacks. So you get that stuff. Theirs is called Summer Movie Camp. So if you search like Summer Movie Kids Tickets, I'm sure these will come up. Obviously, always with these caveats of participating theaters near you, look up, you know, the dates and times and, you know, in whatever town you live in. And we'll link it in the show notes. I found a great roundup of all of these deals at a website called hip2save.com. That's the numeral 2, hip to save. I fact-checked the deals on there. They all the ones I looked at were legit. Alamo Drafthouse is another one that people seem to really like that is offering a kids deal.
Oftentimes I think those are second run, but who, you know, kids don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Like your kid's going to know the difference. Yeah. So, you know, get out there. Get your kids out of the house, shut them up for a few hours, keep cool, enjoy some snacks, and make for a better summer for everyone, I think. That's it for this episode of Your Money's Worth. For show notes and more great Kiplinger content on the topics we discussed on today's show, visit Kiplinger.com/links/podcasts. You can stay connected with us on Twitter at Kiplinger, on Facebook at Facebook.com/Kiplinger Personal Finance, or by emailing us at podcast@Kiplinger.com. And if you like the show, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to Your Money's Worth wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.